if I asked you how the American stock market performed from 1933 to 1945, you'd probably say very, very poorly. And at times, that was true. But the nadir of the American stock market did not happen on December 7th, 1941, the date of Pearl Harbor, nor did it happen when Germany invaded Poland in September of 1939. No, no. It reached a low point in the spring of 1942 at the apogee of the Axis advance, and then rallied into a bull finish by 1945, but still below its pre-war peak in 1937. Interesting stuff, I know. Why is it relevant here? I'm not sure, except it feels increasingly every day like World War III is in the offing, which is terrifying. Yet again, you might be wondering, why do we even continue to record a podcast about financial markets? Well, the specter of global war between superpowers, we must distract ourselves with follies of degenerate stock trades, I suppose. So please enjoy it as we muddle through, I don't know what this market is. But as ever, please remember, we are not professionals. We know not what we do. This is not investment advice. Please don't listen to us, but please do enjoy Degenerate Business School.
Here's the thing. We're approaching the end of the world.
Yeah.
Possibly.
I could have forecasted that like a month ago.
What I really want to know is this. Does CNBC get insider information from inside the Kremlin? I'm just saying, a week before the invasion, CNBC says, there might be an invasion. And they were right. CNBC, early on the call.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but this is a bit paralyzing, right? Because if it is the end of the world, what's the point of investing? All we need to do is hoard as many resources as possible. We got to go to Costco. We need peanut butter. We need to go to Walmart. We need guns. Because according to the market, this is a Mad Max Fury Road situation. Oil is up, gold is up, and the S&P is down.
Fertilizer's up.
Fertilizer. See, when commodities are doing well, I don't know how to approach any of it. So do we just sit on cash? We just sit on the dry powder? The dollar is strong right now. Strong is quite strong.
I mean, people will give you shit for losing 7% to inflation, but you're losing a lot more on the market.
That's exactly right. What I'm saying. I don't understand gold. I don't want to invest in gold. Says the person who invested in Bitcoin. So
long treasuries.
Well, okay. So that was my posture, Robert. Do we just want a taste of what did I send you? TYD? XXX bull, 7 to 10 year treasuries? Flight to safety?
Here's the problem with that. This 10 year treasury has so many purposes to it that it's an indicator of so many things that even if your narrative is true on one end, it's going to be wrong on another, right? So yes, the flight to safety, I mean, I told you guys this last week or 2 weeks ago, whenever that was, right? When Russia invades, the market's going to fall, the rates are going to come back down. That was true. The fact still remains that in a week or two, the Fed's going to raise rates and, you know, Russia be damned. So, like, within that one asset, what's going to win out, the Fed or Russia?
Well, I'm surprised. I thought you were going to say, why would I want to own bonds if the United States is going to collapse too? Because it's the end of the world.
I mean, but I've come to terms with that. Look, I live in Long Beach, so there's a solid chance I may at some point just be like, fuck it, give me a gun and let's do this thing. It's like, you know, no one's going to attack Glendale. No one's going to attack Irvine, but.
Oh, you're like, they need the port of Long Beach for an amphibious assault. Yeah, you're screwed.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to take them a while to get to these mountains over here.
Yeah.
And no one wants to go to the Costa Mesa Mall for anything. James and I are good.
But, no, I mean, as an investment, again, there are conflicting forces here that will make the 10-year moves irrational in the short term. So if tomorrow it shot up to, you know, 2%, would not be shocked. If tomorrow it fell to 1.5%, I would not be shocked.
Well, I'm catching your drift, which is, on the one hand, inflation's already terrible. And it might get worse because of energy and commodity prices is one thing that could weigh against bonds. And then on the other, flight to safety demand.
Yeah, yeah.
And kind of offsetting forces is your point?
Yeah, and the problem is both of those narratives are true. And for the most part, historically, the 10-year has served as, I mean, you're supposed to think of it as, you know, the price of capital or whatever, but because it does serve as a safety net, that throws it completely off loop.
Well, oddly enough, Jameth, scholar of the macroeconomic landscape, if you look at this week, it kind of, and you zoom out on asset classes, doesn't it just, this week is kind of just one big rotation out of equities and into commodities or sectors of the equity market that are tied to commodities? Because the S&P was down on the week, but not down a catastrophic amount. And you're seeing these like technical breakouts from gold, the metals and mining ETF, wheat, oil. So we are still, point being, that still what is propping everything up is the Fed balance sheet in the West, right? Mm-hmm. And until you see QT on balance, like, our SPXS position should be killing it right now. And it's not. And it's because I guess, not that I'm giving up on it, but as long as the balance sheet is there, and Jerry is, he's not turning dovish, but he's like, he's turning hawk light. All of this right now is just a rotation, right?
Yeah, I mean, you still have a lot of liquidity out there, and you got the speculators that are playing the whole Russia dynamic, and they're a big commodities producer, whether it's you know, energy, materials, or food, right? It's all going up. So all these traders are just piling in. And it's a kind of a common thing. And with commodities too, it's like easy come, easy go. It's going to be super volatile, but we're seeing that near-term spike, and it's not helping that, you know, the balance sheet is still at 9 trillion almost.
And Robert, have you successfully cornered the iodine market yet?
No. You know, I thought about it, but I keep thinking back to, I don't know who said this, right? But you can only, like, you never bet on the end of the world, because even if you win, no one's around to pay.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, it's tempting, but.
With a nuclear exchange, people need iodine for their nuclear radiation poisoning. And but it doesn't matter if the currency on the ground is just, you know, cowrie shells or
right
barter. Yeah.
Yeah, I actually had not seen that link that or that thing that James sent us, that iodine ETF spiked. I hadn't seen that happen when I suggested it. So I guess I'm a little bit late to that call.
Well, you posed the other interesting question earlier in the week, which is, your question was, is it time to go long on Russia? And I said, no. Well, I meant to send you this clip. There's a clip of a guy who went on Russian television who's like an investor in Russia. And the lady on TV was trying to ask him about, well, hey, what is your approach to investing right now? And he takes out a bottle of vodka or water, I couldn't tell, and says, I don't have an approach. This is the end. And he's free. So I'm going to argue it's a stay away. It's a stay away for now.
Well, at this
point, I like your instincts.
At this point, you have no choice. Everything's been frozen. I don't think that that leveraged long Russia is even trading anymore.
Because all the Russian stocks were removed from the S&P.
I think they're just being delisted, probably.
On a related note, James, on the sanctions front, I do have a question for you, or which I don't understand. So Russia has reserves, strategic reserves of dollars, yes, to engage for situations such as this or to backstop international trade. And we somehow froze their reserves. How mechanically does the West freeze their dollar reserves?
See, supposedly Putin amassed about $650 billion in foreign currency reserves. And I'm not sure what the split was, or if it was all dollars, but I guess he can't transact anymore. I guess if they cut him off from SWIFT and they cut him off from sort of, I think maybe he can transact with China, but really there's no way of even trading the ruble on an open market, I think, you know, to like buy back the ruble.
I see.
No, like, cause you're kind of isolated. You're kind of cut off from normal, like market making functions. So, you know, I think that's my understanding how it works. I feel like you're cut off from SWIFT. You really can't transact anymore. You can't trade the ruble on an open market. And you can't buy it back. And if your foreign assets are held in, well, I guess it would be held in the Russian central bank, but I don't know if you can really, there's like a counterparty you can really even transact with to make a market.
Okay. On a related note, there's a number of reports that a Russian billionaire's yacht got seized and the guy who owns Chelsea is being forced to sell.
Yes.
How is that legal?
I was wondering about the Chelsea owner, just because I have a passing interest in European soccer, because I'm sophisticated, as you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, Roman Abramovich, the owner of Chelsea. I think that's actually probably just informal pressure, right? Right.
I mean, yeah, that one's probably informal, but the French actually took somebody's yacht. It's like, this is ours now, which I don't get. Like, obviously, I understand the outrage towards the country, but it's sort of like if someone said, oh, your president's a piece of shit, this is mine now. Like, you can't just take my house.
Right? Well, also, yeah, I also wonder, like, if you have Russian oligarch money, why weren't you trying to get out of the system 10 years ago? Is that just because they'll poison you if you ever try to get out? Like, how much money do you need? If you have enough money to have a yacht, why haven't you already emigrated to Portugal, who will take anyone with money, for instance? That's what I would do.
Well, they're connected with the government. I mean, that's how they got their spot anyways. Like, after the fall of, you know, the Gorbachev, the USSR, they kind of were buddy-buddy and they just distributed all the state assets. So it's like their assets are the state assets, and that they kind of are, you know, more or less, you know, kind of hand in hand with the state.
Well, okay, here's another thing that's revelatory about all of this is Twitter is alight with Bitcoin evangelists who keep saying, this is why we need Bitcoin for the people of Russia and Ukraine who are being destroyed by, you know, the collapse of their financial system or financial warfare perpetrated by the West against the East. And Bitcoin's still $39,000. So does this also just kind of prove that the price appreciation in Bitcoin just depends on liquidity? It's a little scary. Or if your country actually implodes, financially speaking, like in Russia, they're clearly in an inflation spiral. Are you just not thinking about that sort of thing? Like I just have to buy bread from the grocery store and I got to buy it now in rubles still. So you're not even thinking about a flight to Bitcoin or something like that.
I mean, it makes sense to, like, when your whole banking system collapses, all you need is like an internet connection and your 24 words and you're good. You can survive. You can make it. So I mean, it makes sense that I think it did pop to 43,000. Then
that's true.
It still is risk on. So there's like sentiment that it's risk on, but yet it has such utility amongst whether it's, you know, Russians or Ukrainians when their banking system collapsed. Like that's the go-to. That's makes it easy. So that is the best use case for it.
Good point. Counter argument: all else equal, Bitcoin should be $28,000. If all that was happening is the unwind of risk on sentiment, it would be much worse than it is right now.
Yeah.
All right. So do we just sit on our hands? We sit on our hands and just hope there's no nukes. Feels like the right approach for one more week. Or Robert, are you going to chase the fertilizer trade?
I actually got out because at this point, like,
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, it hasn't done a whole lot to offset overall losses, but I'll take what I can get.
Yeah, I bailed out of ERX a little too early, but how could I have foreseen this?
Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, at this point, all I can really do is just keep selling calls against my positions. And, you know, it doesn't do anything to necessarily, like, it just offsets the losses a little bit, but there's still losses. There's no getting around that.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. So the final question would be, you're Jerbear. Do we feel a recession is all but certain, global recession, because of the exigent circumstances of the war? He already said, I'm going to do 25 bips in March. But now, Robert, are we back in a regime, which you've been on, which is, in this context especially, the Fed can't be as hawkish as what has been priced in by the credit markets, 7 rate hikes or whatever it is. Because if inflation is a runaway, European demand is going to go into the toilet. Maybe America is a little bit better off, but basically we're going to be in a recession by the second half of the year, and you won't need the rate hikes to cool off the inflation problem.
My time frame was next year there'd be a recession, but yeah, the idea is there. And frankly, the fact that the 2-10 spread is, like, I think less than 30 bips earlier today.
Close to inversion territory, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not looking good. But yeah, this does tell me that, I mean, I've been on this camp and it reaffirms it for me. The Fed will not raise 6 or 7 times. It's not happening.
Well, and then is QT on the table, Jamie?
I mean, he has to be careful now, right? Because there's, since with all the sanctions and Russians being held out of the financial system, right? There's a lot of counterparty risk and contagion risk.
Yeah.
So you have to really keep the spigot open so that, right, you know, with all, so you don't let that dry up, because you're tightening, then you're, it's a kind of a double whammy, right? Because you don't know what the counterparty risk is right now. So it seems like it's going to be muted, but you never know. So that's why you can't really turn off the tap too harshly.
So uncertainty is really high. We're in a real great power geopolitical crisis. But you know what? I'm going to end this on an upbeat. I was thinking about it. There might be a war in the Ukraine, but if there is an end of the world scenario, I don't know. Are they going to send the nukes to Los Angeles? No, it's Sodom and Gomorrah over here, the land of the Lotus Eaters. It would serve no purpose. We're not a nerve center of everything. We're just here. It basically never rains. We've got all the DoorDash of the world at our disposal, cuisine-wise. So, I mean, there might not be a better place in the world to be than the LA metro area, is what I'm trying to tell you right now.
That's if you've accepted the end of the world, right?
Assuming the end of the world. But even if the end of the world doesn't happen, we are closest to the supply chains. There's a lot of material right outside your window, Robert. We are, we're not really a political target for weapons of mass destruction. So.
No, but we are closer to Russia than, say, New York.
I think Moscow is closer to New York, but you're right. Siberia, probably closer to us. So yeah. We're good, right?
I don't know, man. I was having a couple of drinks with a friend earlier, and I say that very lightly because obviously it was many, 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 many drinks. He's like, dude, I want to go. I'm like, no, dude, you shouldn't go. I'm like, dude, I want to go. And this was like when Zelensky was saying, like, hey, we need fighters.
Oh, he was gonna volunteer for the cause.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't know, man. I almost got tucked into it, but
I'm not a fighter. I'm scared of tools. No, I'm
not a fighter. Yeah, like, get these hands dirty. No,
I don't have calluses.
But yeah, it's hard out there.
That's right. All right. Well, we'll just keep waiting.
Yeah. All right. See you guys next week.
Yeah.